Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let us start today by jumping in the Wayback Machine, and let's dial this thing back all the way back to yesterday. The Pittsburgh Steelers were patiently awaiting and fully expecting Le'Veon Bell's arrival. Everything was all right. Nobody was tripping. Everybody was optimistic. It was simply a matter of time. It was inevitable. Just Le'Veon doing Le'Veon things. But now it's go time, and he'll be there. We know this. Center Marquise Pouncey even told ESPN, quote, "He'll be here Wednesday. Count on it," end quote. Head coach Mike Tomlin was chill. Quote, "I haven't thought about it.
I hadn't thought about it."
End quote. So everything was cool. Everything was chill. Business is business. And one of the best run organizations in all of pro sports was keeping emotion out of it and keeping their eyes on Sunday and the Browns. Everything was fine. Right up until Lev did not show up to work yesterday, and then all hell broke loose. Then all of a sudden, everything changed, and it changed in a hurry. All of a sudden, it was a huge deal that Bell was not at practice. All of a sudden, the Steelers were heading into their final preparations for Sunday without their game-changing, dual-threat Pro Bowler in the backfield, and they had no sense of when he would be there. Suddenly, it was a big freaking deal. Not my take, but the guys who block for him. Check out this quote from Pouncey.
"And obviously, it's Le'Veon over the Steelers, and we're the Steelers."
Uh-oh! Quote, "Obviously, it's Le'Veon over the Steelers, and we are the Steelers." End quote. And that's not all. There was a hell of a lot more where that came from. Guard Ramon Foster, the Steelers player rep, said, quote, "What do you do? Here's a guy who doesn't give a damn, I guess. So we'll treat it as such. I just hate it came to this. He's making seven times what I made, twice as much as Al is making, and we're the guys who do it for him." End quote. And this dagger from an anonymous player who told ESPN, quote, "He effed us," end quote. So all of a sudden, this was the very opposite of business. This was completely 100% personal. Check out this quote that Foster gave to 97.3 The Fan in Pittsburgh.
"My mom died. I went to her funeral and came to camp the next day. I've seen people die and come and give his all to this team. Like I said, I guess it is a little bit different, a little bit tiresome now. I'm tired of antics."
Right, again, these are not Steeler fans melting down message boards. These are Steelers players, and not just any Steelers players, but team leaders. Pouncey was named a team captain 2 days ago. Foster is the union rep. Highly respected dudes that are dropping quotes like, "My mom died, I went to the funeral, I came to camp the next day." Al has seen people die. He's making seven times what I made. Obviously, it's Le'Veon over the Steelers, and we are the Steelers. End quote. You never see guys crack teammates for doing whatever they can to get whatever they can, because they've probably been in a similar situation themselves. So normally they don't say anything. Normally they support the guy trying to get his. Hell, these same guys have supported Bell in the past, but not anymore. Now they're killing him. Now they don't see him fighting to get what he thinks he has earned. They see him as putting himself above the team. They see him as a selfish guy who has abandoned the fight, and now he's no longer one of them. They stop just short of saying, "This cat is dead to me." These are the guys the Steelers put out front, the dudes who block for Bell, and now they're running his ass over. They fully expected this guy to show up yesterday and be ready to ball in the opener, but he didn't, and he won't, and now they're pissed. I mean, this thing got really nasty really quickly, and it's complicated. And then you've got Bell's agent. Bell's agent is not helping matters. Look, I understand that the agent's job is to get as much money as possible for his client. That's how it works. And by raising the possibility of workload, and that seems to be really aggravating his teammates, by raising that possibility of workload, the agent was agenting. The agent is trying to make sure his client is compensated appropriately for the workload. I get that, but I also get how that comes across to his teammates. Listen, I'm never going to tell an NFL player, especially an NFL player, to not do whatever they can to make as much money as they can, especially if that player is a running back. Everybody knows how brutal the game is, how short their career is, and we're starting to get a sense of what life is like after the game. We're starting to get a sense of the toll that the game takes on the player and everybody around that player in retirement. So yes, every player should get as much money as he can get. And I know every fan wants to believe that the ring is the thing, and it is, but money is really real. And you know what happens to Super Bowl rings? Sometimes they get pawned when guys run out of money. So hold out. Don't report. Do whatever you want to get more leverage. Just know this, it's going to come with consequences. And one of the consequences is when you do not show up, your teammates expect you to show up, then they're going to get pissed. And when your agent starts talking about workload, your teammates might get even more pissed. So this question, do your teammates have the right to be angry? I mean, there is that unwritten rule that you don't count another man's money and that players should always have other guys' backs in negotiations. And I get the argument that Bell is one of the rare players with the talent who can actually attempt to change the system. And the teammates should support that. I get that he might be trying to break through and maybe even raise the bar for everybody. Except yesterday was not a breakthrough. Yesterday was a meltdown. And now Bell is going to have to do some serious work to put it all back together. Because once you lose your teammates, especially the guys up front who are blocking for you, it is nearly impossible to get them back. And especially if they think that you don't give a damn about them and you've put your own interests ahead of the team's. And they think they have. He has. And to be honest, I'm not sure I can argue against that. Now what? He's not in, and it doesn't look like he's coming in anytime soon. And even though they've owned the Browns, traditionally, this is a different Browns team. What happens if they get beat by the Browns? That could happen. Then what happens? So where do you come out? Is Le'Veon Bell doing what anybody else would do or should do in his position? Or did this guy abandon the fight? Did he betray his teammates? Is he putting himself ahead of the team? And if they don't have this guy, and they don't have this guy for an extended period, what does that do to Pittsburgh's chances when their window is shutting? Steeler fans, get up in here. 1-800-636-8686. Look, I'll admit it. I said yesterday, it's going to be fine. It's all par for the course. He'll be in. But that's just me. Who cares what I think? His teammates thought that it was going to be fine. His teammates thought that he was going to be in. His teammates had no idea that he wasn't coming in. And again, one of the reasons why they're so angry, they had no idea he wasn't coming in. Their feeling is, hey, look, if you're not coming in, just let us know. Let us know. We're texting you. We're talking. Let us know. And they didn't know because I have never seen guys so angry on record about a teammate trying to get a contract. Robert Klemko is my guest. Robert, good morning. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Dude, I'm great. And I'll talk to you about that part a little bit later on. But the biggest story in the last 24 hours has been Le'Veon Bell not reporting yesterday and how his teammates responded. What was your reaction when you saw some of the comments from his teammates?
You know, it was very odd. And I think you got the sense of that when you saw the rest of these NFL players on Twitter almost unanimously saying that something was wrong there. And that you never talk about another man's money. And that's something that you hear a lot in NFL locker rooms when guys are holding out. And I know that they may have a different culture around holdouts in Pittsburgh. They're very rare there over the last couple decades. I remember it was a big deal when Hines Ward held out in 2005 when he was trying to become the highest paid receiver. But still, you know, to see NFL players slamming another NFL player who's trying to get paid is an odd thing. And it leads you to believe that there's much more to that story. Either Le'Veon Bell in other ways has rubbed teammates the wrong way, and or it's possible that these players have been given the impression that Bell would be back yesterday or the day before, either by Bell or by coaches and management. But just to see everybody on one day deciding this is the day we're going to slam this guy, makes me think there's a lot more to that story.
Robert Klemko joining us. Very well said. If you had to speculate, can you fairly speculate? What do you think it is?
You know, I think it's a combination of both of those things. You know, when Antonio Brown was trying to get paid, when Ben Roethlisberger was trying to get paid, and those guys were talking about holdouts, you didn't see any of this. To be fair, neither of them took it as far, and management didn't take it as far with those players as they have taken it with Bell. And you think of the Steelers, and you think of this big three, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell. But I think the Steelers look at it a lot differently. I think they see a running back and hold that position in far less value than they do a quarterback or a wide receiver who they feel can play and be effective for a longer period of time. But I think that Le'Veon Bell and some of his actions has to have rubbed teammates the wrong way. And I think there was an expectation that he would at least return this week.
So how do you think that plays out? When do you think he does come in?
Well, now that he hasn't shown up for the week before the game, you know, I think he's willing to take it the whole way and show up at the end of the season for a playoff run with the intention of playing for another team next year. I think he's honestly trying to save his legs before he gets a new contract. And I think it's possible the Steelers look back on this in 3 months and with a fresh Le'Veon Bell in a soft AFC North division and say that we're glad he's fresh.
Today is the day. The NFL is here, and the only thing besides some choice couch real estate and a few cold ones that can make this season better is mybookie.com. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code Rome to activate that offer. A dollar for dollar match on your deposit? That is some serious ROI before you even hit the digital window. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Robert Klemko joining us, football writer for Sports Illustrated. This is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. All right, so moving on to something else. You've got a great piece up right now on SI.com and MMQB about John Elway and where he is in his life right now. Before we get into the details of his search for a quarterback, what is your sense about Elway? I mean, is he happy right now as a person? Is he satisfied? Where's his head at?
Yeah, it was cool to talk to him, but not just him. His oldest son, well, his only son, who was the former high school quarterback and went to Arizona State to play football and dropped out. And we get into the reasons for all that, but it was great to hear about some personal changes John's made in his life, having grandkids, the humbling that comes with the last two seasons being flushed down the drain, being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and not being able to draft a franchise quarterback in a couple of big tries, big swings at it. So, you know, I think he's as competitive as he ever was. I think it pains him to not be able to identify that franchise quarterback. But I think in his personal life, he's a really happy guy.
You know, I'm going to talk to you about the personal life in a minute, and I want to ask you about his son. But when he comes in as a team executive and he has almost immediate success, for a while there it seemed like this guy could do absolutely no wrong. Then what changed?
Yeah, you know, he goes out, and that 2014 defensive free agent class was one for the history books. I mean, you bring in DeMarcus Lawrence, T.J. Ward at his most effective, Aqib Talib at his most effective, and then you pair that with Peyton Manning, and it didn't even matter that Peyton Manning's skills were in such decline. That defense was just historically good. Better, I would argue, than any defense the Seahawks put out in the last decade. And he looks like he can do no wrong. And then Manning retires, and then you start to realize that some of these draft picks and draft choices that he's made, the vast majority of them really haven't worked out at all. And he talked about a change in philosophy there, because when he lost Peyton Manning, when Peyton Manning retired, he felt like the locker room was itching to go back to the playoffs for John to find the next big quarterback to take them to on a Super Bowl run. And when that didn't happen, the locker room was lacking in leaders, especially after DeMarcus Ware retired. And there were guys that lost hope in the season, in games, because of the quarterback situation. So he did two things. He went out and found a quarterback in Case Keenum, a guy that he tried to trade for in 2015 but was unable to do. And he started drafting players just recently, this year, guys that wouldn't lose hope. T. team captains. I mean, Courtland Sutton, the wide receiver everyone's raving about in Denver, who looks like he's going to be a serious red zone threat, was a three-time captain at Southern Methodist. I don't even know how you do that.
So in the meantime, he's still looking for that quarterback, right? And we can talk about whether or not Case Keenum is that guy or a stopgap guy. But we're talking about one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time who's having trouble finding quarterbacks. Now let me ask you this. Elway's friend John Lynch told you that in his role with the 49ers, there is one position that he cannot scout, safeties, his old position. Why is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of guys that played, and John Lynch and Elway are included, and they both admit this, scout the opposite side of the ball better. Because John Elway can look at a cornerback and say, I remember what great cornerbacks did that was frustrating and difficult to play against. And John Lynch can look at a wide receiver and say, I remember all the nuances and specifics about great wide receivers. Because they studied those players more than they studied players on their own side of the ball. And I think the other aspect is that they hold the position to such a high standard that it's sometimes hard for them to evaluate players who don't understand or see the game the way that they did. And I think that you see that with Elway. And one of the things his friend and honestly one of his loudest critics, Mark Schlereth, has said and told me for the story is that when John looks at a quarterback prospect, he sees the arm, he sees the size, he sees the ability, and he says, I can coach that kid up. I've got Gary Kubiak here with me. I've got some great quarterbacking minds at my disposal, and we can coach good football habits and good football into this player. And it's just not something that you can regularly do. You know, one of the cool things I learned in the story was that his dad, the week before he died, put his stamp of approval on Drew Brees and wanted the Broncos to draft Drew Brees in the first round in, I think, in the year 2000 or 2001, whichever year Drew came out. But the Broncos already had Brian Greasy, so they went another way.
Robert Klemko joining us. That's a great note, actually. So his dad, what did he like about Drew Brees at that time, and why was he pushing so hard for Brees?
So his dad had been a former colleague of Joe Tiller, who was a coach at Purdue while Brees was there. And Joe Tiller, you know, admitted that Brees didn't have the arm, didn't necessarily have the size, had a little bit of mobility, but nothing to rave about. But he said that this guy led men. He had a great understanding of the game, and he was an incredible locker room presence. And that's what sold his dad. Now, you look at the guys that John has drafted, you know, 15, 14, 13 years later, and those aren't guys that you would say were great locker room presence or had incredible work ethic or led guys, but they had the ability. And I think that in bringing in Case Keenum, part of that is a concession to his dad's way of thinking. And also a nod to Gary Kubiak, who coached Keenum in Houston and had to have been a big influence in him signing and the Broncos offering him in Denver.
All right, so Keenum, does he have his guy now in Keenum, or is that a stopgap, and does the search still continue?
Well, the convenient thing about Keenum for Denver is that he was able to he was willing to sign what's essentially a two-year prove-it deal, where there's no real long-term commitment to him. And even if they cut him after just one season, there's not a huge loss, not a huge hit in dead cap money. So I think that they're prepared for him to be a stopgap quarterback. I think that if he does anything short of take them to the playoffs next year, they'll be looking at a quarterback in the first round. There's a lot more optimism this time of year in Denver, you know, among the players, really, and the coaches as well, because of the way that Keenum has handled himself in practice and so clearly shown that he's the number one quarterback here, where that hasn't happened the last couple of years. So there's optimism, but I think they're prepared for him to just be a stopgap guy.
Robert Klemko joins us for a few more moments, and then you mentioned his personal life. How about that dynamic between John Elway and his son, Jack? Jack, of course, was a scholarship quarterback at Arizona State. After a redshirt season, he decided to stop playing football altogether. So how would you describe the relationship between John and his son when Jack decided to stop playing?
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Jack because he's the only son, and he kind of wished he had a brother to shoulder those expectations. And he wanted to just be a regular guy. And meanwhile, John is thinking, hey, he's going to play 4 years of college football. I'm going to road trip with all my buddies to games. He's going to have this great brotherhood. And then Jack, without consulting him at all, calls him up the day he's about to go quit Arizona State football and says, sorry, Dad, I'm quitting. And it created a lot of distance between them for a number of years, and it's a distance that's closed here recently as John has mellowed.
Robert Klemko, my guest. Let me quickly ask you this. If you look at Elway's search for a quarterback and what it might reveal about him, we talked about that at length. What does it say about John Gruden and the way he handled the Khalil Mack situation?
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating division right now, isn't it? The AFC West.
Definitely.
I think that Gruden feels like he wants to commit money to the offensive side of the ball, and he knows he can win on defense without having a big, high-paid player on that side of the ball. I think that he probably laments losing Mack as a locker room presence, and he knows he's going to take a hit in that locker room, especially if they don't succeed in any way this season. But I think he's going to prioritize other positions, and he didn't want to make a big long-term commitment before he ever got to coach another game in the NFL.
Listen, Robert, you've accomplished an enormous amount in your career, but you tweeted out a pic recently that might be your greatest accomplishment ever. I'm talking about that rat tail, that majestic rat tail. How old were you? How long did you grow that thing? And how much respect did your peers have for it?
I think I was 10 years old when that picture was taken. I had a lot of hang time on that rat tail. I didn't love it, but when kids started making fun of me for it, I just kept it around kind of out of spite. And eventually, I cut it off, I think, in seventh grade, which I'm very thankful for that decision.
All right, so where is it? I mean, is your mom or your grandmom, does somebody have it in a scrapbook? Do you still have it? What happened to that?
I think my mom has it in a cigar box or something in my house. I really don't want to see it all these years later.
Kyle Freeland is my guest. Kyle, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's up? I'm glad I got through. I thought Hawk was going to yell at me.
My man. Nah, dude, you sound great. You're great. I appreciate you saying it, too. All right, so the team is rolling right now. Hawk just turned white. Like, he can't even believe it. Hey, Kyle, did somebody feed you that, or did you hear that? How do you even know who Hawk is?
I have my connections.
Okay, good. Good. Good looking out. All right, so the team is rolling right now. You've won five straight, including last night's 5-3 win over the Giants, included three home runs from Trevor Story. First, let me ask you that. What goes through your mind when you see a teammate raking like that and having a night like that?
My jaw just kept dropping every single time they hit one out of the park. It was unbelievable. I mean, he's one of those guys that, you know, has made himself into one of those players where when he comes with a dish or when he takes the field, you pay attention because he's going to do something special. And last night he did something extremely special.
So, Kyle, what's it like when the team is playing the way it is and you're in the middle of a postseason race and you guys are finding different ways to win every single night? Like, take me inside that clubhouse. What's the vibe like among the players and in the clubhouse?
It's great. You know, we're really light. You know, keeping everything easy, simple. Guys are picking each other up, whether it's pitchers or position players. When one guy's slumping or struggling a little bit, another guy's coming in, he's picking up the slack for him. But the mood in the clubhouse is incredible. Chemistry is great. Everyone's getting along really well, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play baseball right now with this group.
Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland, my guest. I had your manager, Bud Black, on recently. He was raving about you as a pitcher and the year you're having. And one of the first things he said was that you've been so consistent for the last few months. The team has won 9 of your last 10 starts. So how much pride do you take in the fact that your manager and your teammates know they can count on you every single time you take the mound?
I take a lot of pride in that. Knowing that I have, you know, a team behind me when I take that mound that has a lot of confidence in me only builds the confidence in myself, and it's great to know that, and know that from my manager as well. You know, being only a second year guy in this league in a really tough division, it's great knowing that and having that support from my teammates and my staff.
You know, he also made the point that he feels like you've made the transition already in your second year from being a thrower to a pitcher. What's that transition mean to you or feel like to you?
It is a lot of learning for me. You know, I never really saw myself as a thrower. I was, you know, myself as a pitcher, you know, a thinking player, someone who's gonna, you know, solve things out there on the field on the fly. But over the past year or so, the amount that I've learned from this league about myself, about my teammates, about this team as a whole, and the game at this level has been incredible. And I've just been trying to soak everything up as much as possible, and learn from everything that, you know, whether it's success or failures, I've been trying to learn from it.
It's got to be great, too, to have a manager like Bud Black, who pitched for as long as he did in the major leagues. Hey, look, you know, they pay me not to have favorites. I got to be objective, but I can't lie, man. I love the guy. Buddy Black is one of my favorite guys to talk to, one of my favorite guys ever in any sport. What's he been like to play for?
He's incredible. I mean, he's a manager who loves connecting with his team and his players that he's working with. And, you know, he's fun to be around. He's a great guy to learn from. For me, having him as my first ever manager in the big leagues, I think is just might be hard to beat further down my career, wherever it takes me. But he's a guy that, you know, as a pitcher, I can go and talk to and bounce things off of because he's been there before. So it's kind of like having a third pitching coach there, where, you know, you can get a different mindset from somebody other than your two pitching coaches, who are great though. But it's really nice having him.
Colorado Rockies pitcher Kyle Freeland, my guest. They're on top in the NL West. Big series coming up against the Dodgers. Now, Kyle, whenever we talk about pitching and pitching in Denver, the topic of altitude is obviously going to come up. But you're from Denver, and not only are you from Denver, but you were born shortly after the Rockies came into existence. So what's it mean to you to be pitching for your hometown team?
It means the absolute world to me. I mean, I was born about a month and a half after their very first game in Colorado. So I've been raised, a Rockies fan my whole life, and now I am a huge Rockies fan. I get to play for them too, and I know how rare of an opportunity it is that I have, and you know, I want to take full advantage of it, and you know, not waste a single second of it. So it's been something that I've taken on with the whole altitude thing, Coors Field effect. It's something I love going head on and taking control.
Hey, what's that like? For instance, I told the story, Kyle. I was spent the last couple of weeks on vacation, or a few weeks back. I went to Wisconsin, and man, just probably added 5 or 7 pounds in 1 week. Then we came to Aspen. I couldn't wait to try to work it out. So I jump on like an elliptical machine the first day, Kyle. Dude, I nearly gassed out and died in a 45-minute session. I could not believe how hard it was to work and do any exercise at altitude, even for professional athletes. Do you see that from the opposition? When they first come in, how hard is it to get acclimated?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the other day, 2 years ago, when we were playing San Diego at home, I was on first base, and I was talking to Hosmer. He's like, "Man, I can't go 20 seconds of run without, you know, sucking wind and not being able to catch my breath." And I started laughing, like, "Welcome to Denver, man. That's how it is. You gotta get used to it as quickly as possible. It's not easy."
No, dude, it's not easy. I'm glad it's not just me then, because it went really, really badly for me, man. It's humbling. It was really demoralizing. Now, you were there growing up, so you saw that great 07 team make the run of the World Series. One of the guys who was on that team, of course, was Matt Holliday, and now he's back with the team. What's it like to have him in the clubhouse?
It's incredible. It's kind of a dream come true. I mean, him and Chris Iannetta, those are two guys that, you know, were on that team. I got to watch, you know, two players that I really remember about that team, and you know, having those guys in the clubhouse, and you know, being able to get Matt up here late in the season to help us with this playoff push and the success that he's been having, I'm like a little kid again, kind of. You know, it takes me back to, you know, when I was a freshman in high school, watching them on TV and, you know, seeing the incredible thing that they're doing and seeing how excited the whole state was for this team.
Let me take you back even further than that. Go back to elementary school. A couple of weeks back, you went to your elementary school and you gave out backpacks. It's the same school where your mother, Susan, has worked for 16 years. What was that experience like, and what's it like to be able, again, to do that in your hometown?
It was, you know, it was humbling, and it was great to see the impact that it truly had. I didn't realize how big of an impact it had until, you know, after the fact, when I started talking to some of the staff, and how the parents were calling in saying, "This is incredible. You know, I can now, you know, afford to buy my kids, you know, new school clothes for this year, instead of having to try and split it up between, you know, school supplies and clothes." And you know, with some people having multiple kids, it's much harder. So it was great knowing that, seeing the kids, you know, so excited to get these backpacks with all the school supplies and the teachers were ecstatic too. It was just all around a really good day, and everyone was extremely happy about it.
Had to feel great. So last thought, you've got the Dodgers coming in, and obviously you got this real battle going on right now in the NL West. How do you approach these three games? Is it just another series, and do you tell yourself that, or do you act or approach it like the postseason is starting early?
I think it could be, you know, an early matchup of what could come. But we're gonna take it as, you know, it's another series. We still have, you know, a good chunk of September left, and we're gonna keep playing the game of baseball that we've been playing. We're not gonna try and hype it up at all. We're not gonna try and act like it doesn't mean anything or anything like that. We're gonna play or bring the baseball, and we're gonna play it the best we can.
All right, so the Steelers are dealing with their situation internally. But across that state, the Philadelphia Eagles are about to open up the NFL season. The NFL is finally back. I mean, let's be honest. It never really goes away. It's not like you weren't thinking about the NFL at least once every single day since February 4th. From the combine, to the draft, to your own fantasy draft. I mean, it's on your mind at all times. But now the actual games are back. Football is back. That means Philly is back. And they're kicking off tonight in Philadelphia. The Falcons come to town. A new banner goes up. And it's a good reminder of how utterly insane Philadelphia's season was last year. I mean, it's so crazy. There's almost a part of you that wonders, did that really happen? I mean, there are times where I think there's no way that happened. I mean, it's Philadelphia we're talking about. The city that never gets over. The city that proudly chants, no one likes us, no one likes us, we don't care. And it's an Eagles team that was famous for coming close but never quite getting over. So, did that team, the Philadelphia Eagles, really win a Super Bowl? Are they really going to hang that banner tonight? I mean, I almost don't even care about the game itself. I'm going to be watching to make sure that all of that really did happen. Did they really lose their MVP candidate quarterback, Carson Wentz, in December? Did they also lose Jason Peters, Darren Sproles, Jordan Hicks, Caleb Sturgis, and more along the way? And don't forget about those details, and don't let them become normal, because nothing about last year's run was normal. Did they really turn Nick Foles? Did they really turn to him for a Super Bowl run? The same Nick Foles who had started one game the previous season, and the same Nick Foles who was about to walk away from the game altogether. Did that guy win the Super Bowl? Did the Eagles, who lost to the Cowboys 6-0 at the end of the regular season, actually win a Super Bowl? Did the same Eagles team that beat the Falcons 15-10 in the divisional game really take the Vikings apart in the NFC Championship game? I mean, did the Eagles really break out dog masks for a playoff game at home? Did the city really put Crisco on light poles to prevent them from having people climb them? And it didn't work. Did that fan really slam horse crap? Did Nick Foles really average more than 300 yards passing and a QBR of 115 in the postseason? Did Nick Foles and Doug Peterson really school Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl? Hell, is it possible that Foles not only passed for 373 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl, but this guy caught a touchdown pass too? I mean, did all that stuff happen? Did the Eagles really win the Super Bowl? Did Philly really get over for the first time ever? Did Jason Kelce really give that epic parade speech? Answer, hell yes he did.
No one wanted us. No one liked this team. No analyst liked this team to win the Super Bowl. And nobody likes our fans. And you know what? I've just heard one of the best chants this past day. And it's one of my favorite and it's new. And I hope y'all learn it. To all those people that got us out and to everybody who said that we couldn't get it done. What my man Jay Ajayi just said.
I know that really happened. I'll never forget seeing that. So now they're back on the field. And it's a reminder that it all did happen. It all went down. It was all real. Really, really real. Really awesome. World champions. World bleeping champions.
We're the Eagles! Eagles! No!
Trevor Price is my guest. Trevor, what's going on? Good morning.
What's up, Jim? And I think we should have changed the name from Rome Price Opinions to Rome Price Facts. Because I don't give opinions, I give facts.
Good, man. I'm glad. All right, good.
F-A-F-A-X, facts.
F-A-X. All right, Trevor, so we're a couple of days out from launching the RPO, RPF, whatever you want to call it. Got to get your mindset heading into Monday. I know you're pumped. How do you feel about this thing, and how are you going to approach it? What will they get?
The thing that has happened to me over the last couple of years is as my kids have grown up and I haven't been on TV, I wind up giving them all my hot takes and all my information. And my daughters are like, man, get out of here with all this stuff we don't understand. Oh, you know why they rolled it too deep and the coverages, and you know, they run in the middle of the field and the text game and the TE game and the linebacker has to fail. And they're like, look, we just want to play some fantasy football. So I need to find a way to get this stuff off my chest. So that's why I called you. I was like, yo, you want to talk some real deep football sporting kind of knowledge? And you were like, yeah. So that's what I want to bring. I want to kind of go a little deep in the weeds. You know what I mean? Because when you're on TV, Jim, and I was on TV one time, a long time ago, they said, you know, when you start talking over people's heads, it doesn't play well on television. But it will play well what we're about to do. So that's what I'm trying to bring.
Well, listen, you don't want to talk over their heads, but you do want to get in the weeds. You do want to get deep. You want to be hardcore football, and you need that. And we'll keep that thing fast moving, and we're going to cover a lot of ground. And like you said, Trevor, you want to get some things off your chest. So as an example, what are some things you're burning on right now? What do you want to get off your chest? Pick any topic right now.
All right, let me give you one that people are going to hate. I think the Rams are going to stink. I think they're going to stink.
Why do you think so?
Here's the reason why. When you have a team with big personalities is one thing, but what coaches like to have is somebody who's a leader. Who is going to lead Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib? Like, who's going to be the one that tells them, hey, guys, play better? Is it going to be Sue, who just got there? Is it going to be Aaron Donald as he's counting his money? Is it going to be Todd Gurley? Is it going to be Jared Goff? No, it's not. What happens in these kind of situations where you have guys that have been alphas all their lives, everybody wants to be the chief and nobody wants to be the Indian. And that's going to happen to the Rams as clear as day. Jim, it's easy to sing when everybody's winning and counting their money. It's not easy to sing when we're losing and some of us haven't been paid. I see disaster coming for this team. I see it as clear as day because I was part of something like this with the Ravens. So I showed up to the Ravens, and they were telling me about Ray Lewis and Ed Hartwell. Ed Hartwell was a linebacker that played with Ray the year before I got there. So they said what happened was the Ravens came to Ray Lewis and said, do you want to do a dance coming out the tunnel and kind of get the crowd hyped up? And Ray said yes. Then Ed Hartwell heard about it and was like, I want to do a dance too. And they were like, that's not how this works. I see some of that coming for this team. I just do. Forget all the talent and all the money they've spent. This is a one-year rental. They are swinging for the fences, and that never works.
Trevor Price joining us. He is a two-time Super Bowl champ. He's got a couple of rings. He is the co-host of the RPO Pod. We're going to launch this on Monday, so you're starting to get a taste of exactly how this is going to go and what kind of insight you're going to get. Trevor, what do you think is going to happen tonight? Philadelphia, we've been talking about this. The Eagles got theirs. The city of Philadelphia got theirs. The banner is going to go up tonight. How do you see that game going?
I see the Falcons putting a real beating on Philadelphia, like they stole something. Because in the Falcons' mind, the Eagles did steal something from them. See, what's going to happen, when I was in high school, Jim, I wanted to play linebacker, right? So the University of Florida coach, defense coordinator team, Jim Collins, comes to me and says, you want to play linebacker? You're going to have 4-4 running at you and 4-3 running across you. What are you going to do then? I said, I'll play defensive line. I think that's what the Falcons are about to do with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. They're going to have 4-3 running forward and 4-3 running sideways. And how do you deal with that? You deal with that by covering everybody with those two and Austin Hooper in the middle of the field for the Falcons. He's going to have 2 touchdowns tonight. I think that's going to be the problem that Eagles have to deal with because the Falcons are not going to be able to run the ball on them. Not with Helody and Timmy Jernigan and Fletcher Cox and these gigantic, fast, violent men. I think running the ball is a fruitless exercise against the Eagles. But I think you can throw the ball over the field against them if you have 2 guys that, again, run 4-3 forward and 4-3 sideways.
Trevor Price. He's got a couple of Super Bowl rings, and he's going to have a podcast with me starting on Monday. Trevor, explain this. I mean, is it not a thing, right, where you do not talk about another man's money? You do not talk about another man's money, yet in Pittsburgh, they can't wait to talk about Le'Veon Bell's money. Have you ever seen anything like that, and what's going on, if you had to guess, inside that locker room?
Man, listen, I think I might need more time for this one because I don't understand how the Pittsburgh Steelers became a Pop Warner team.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
So, what everybody understands is the football business has two words, football and business. And this is a business. There is one team in the NFL, and I hate saying this. The only team in the NFL that matters is that you're in the NFL, right? You speaking about another man's money when we're all getting paid different amounts, we are all compensated differently because some of us are more important than others. And the people that are unimportant, just being honest, the people that do not fall under that pay scale that Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger fall under should not be complaining about their money when they are not the type of guys that get paid like Zach Martin or the kid from Cleveland who's a guard making $12 million a year. I know Ramon, right? I played against Ramon Foster. Ramon Foster's a good dude. He's a good guy. He's a good football player. But to say that Le'Veon makes more money than me, you can't do that. You just cannot. That does not happen in Hollywood, Jim. It does not happen in radio hosts. It is not. It should not happen in NFL.
So what do you think?
What happened is?
Yeah. What's going on? What happened?
So
there?
What happened is, you know, Ramon Foster's there Wednesday. It's that period in between the two practices that the media comes in the locker room, and he took the bait. He took the cheese. You know, like they tell you, media training 101, do not pick up the cheese. It's a trap. And he picked up the cheese and it smacked his finger and he yelped up some nonsense. And that's what happened. I think if he could do it differently, believe me, they all would.
Yeah, but the thing is, though,
it's not what you do to it's not what you do to a teammate.
Yeah, but Trevor, okay, fair enough. But it wasn't just Foster. It was Pouncey. It was Foster. It wasn't just one guy. And it doesn't seem like they got hooked by the media. It seemed like they'd been kind of carrying that around, right? Because it all came out at the same time, and it was more than one guy saying it.
Remember, offensive linemen are like circus elephants. What one does, the other ones do. That's just the way it is, man. And I think they had at some point before then talked among themselves, and when it came time, it all came out. I don't understand. Forget how valuable he is to your team. Forget that. That has nothing to do with anything. Forget how valuable he is to your success, right? If you play well in the NFL, you will keep your job. Why are you concerned with someone else's job? It's like being a leader, right? If you're an NFL player and you need to be led, you don't need to be in the NFL.
Dude, it's good to see Trevor. Trevor, it's good to see that you still have such high respect for offensive linemen. Did you just call them circus elephants?
That's true. They'll tell you that. That's what they are, circus elephants.
No, I've never heard them say that. Is, I'm not sure they would tell me that.
Tail to nose. They just all go in a line the same way. Ask any good offensive line coach. Circus elephants.
Trevor Price, leave them wanting a little more. This is a taste of what you're going to get every single Monday for a half hour or more. And not only that, Trevor will talk about the Monday night matchup, the Thursday night matchup. We'll go with the waiver wire for fantasy, and he's going to let it rip for sure. Trevor, good job. Listen, man, have an amazing weekend. I know you and I will be communicating, and let's get this thing done on Monday. Let's roll.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. My kids are listening, which is going to be hilarious.
Just make sure they subscribe, Trevor, and all their friends. All right?
I will.
All right, bro. I'll talk to you soon, Trevor. Thank you.
Good night.